Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Monday, April 3rd, 2017. The time is 9:19 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? For those of you joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the State Capitol Building, Room 532. Before the committee this morning is SB 54, Crime and Sentencing, an act relating to crime and criminal law relating to violations of conditions of release, relating to sex trafficking, relating to sentencing, relating to probation, relating to driving without a license, relating to pretrial service programs, and providing for an effective date. The public hearing was open and closed on 3/28/2017. We've heard from the sponsors. Senator Bishop, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 54, version 30-LS0461/N before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Lucky, could you put yourself on the record and explain the changes?
For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, staff to Senator McKinnon and the Senate Finance Committee. The CS in front of you just incorporates the amendments that were taken on the record by the committee last week. You'll find those changes in a new section 18 and 19, both on page 11, starting at line 13 through line 27. There's one more amendment that was adopted, and it was a new Senate section 21, which begins on page 12, line 1, and continues a couple of pages through. You'll see the change in wording on page 14, line 25. Of course, the extra pages had to be included because the section of law is long, but the operative change is on page 14, and that section goes through page 15, line 6.
Are there questions on the CS? Thank you, Ms. Lucky. I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to adopting the CS for Senate Bill number 54, Finance /N? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 54, Finance /N is before the committee. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 1.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chairman, the amendment that I had discussed the last two previous times that came about was trying to do some compromise between the 90 days and the 360 days that is in the bill. The 120 days was considered initially by the Judiciary Committee but was reversed. So there was additional concern by Mr. Skidmore regarding conflicts with DUIs, and my staff has worked with him, and he says they appear to be addressed in this final version. And I believe that they do, but it could receive additional consideration once it gets to the other body. So with that, I offer this compromise.
If I could invite the sponsor, Senator Coghill, as well as his staff, Jordan Schilling, to the microphone, if you'd like to comment on amendment number 1 for consideration by the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is something that I've been supportive of along the way, even from the debate under Senate Bill 91 through to this very day. So this is something I would be supportive of, and some of the nuances in the language are important. So it's a debate, Madam Chair, that we've had with the Department of Law probably from the making of Senate Bill 91 right on through to today. And we're trying to find the range that holds people accountable under the more egregious C felonies. Remember, these are first-time C felonies. And those who could be and should be turned into another diversionary under a court order. And so this gives a huge amount of discretion to the judges, in my view, and still stays true to the principle of diversion. It's not data-driven, as you well know, and it was something that the commission kind of debated fairly hotly. There's no doubt about it. And it's not surprising that the debate has spilled over into the legislature, and it's appropriate that it is. So I'm supportive of it. If there's any other context to it, I probably should let Mr. Schilling talk about the C felony context.
Mr. Schilling, if you could identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with any comments for consideration by the committee.
For the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. I would agree with everything Senator Coghill just said. I would just add, though, that this iteration of this amendment addresses the conflicts with the DUI statute that the Department of Law raised last hearing.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Dunlap.
Through the chair, just curious, what do other states do? What are their ranges in something like this? Is it zero to 120, or is it zero to 365, generally speaking?
Right off the top of my head, I don't have the answer to that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to invite Department of Law, Mr. Skidmore. Welcome to Senate Finance. Mr. Skidmore, if you could identify yourself for the record and then please provide comments on Amendment Number 1.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. So the amendment that you have in front of you this morning is Amendment Number 1, which addresses Class C felonies. And I would agree, and we appreciate the work with Senator Hoffman's office to address the conflicts with the DUI statute. I believe that Amendment 1 will indeed address those conflicts in an appropriate manner. The other concerns that the Criminal Division has with this particular amendment is the amount of discretion that's provided to judges. Let me turn directly to the question posed by Senator Dunleavy. When you look at the ranges of what other states do for low-level felonies, when we had only a presumptive probation, which is where we were before this amendment, that placed Alaska as the lowest in the nation for the sentencing discretion that judges had. With the amendment, we would no longer be the lowest, but we are still very, very low in the nation in terms of the discretion that our judges would provide. One state that we frequently heard discussed is Texas. Texas, for example, has a sentencing range of 6 months up to 2 years. So when we talk about criminal justice reform working in other states, many of those other states have far more discretion that they've given to the judges. The Department of Law respects that this is a policy decision that the legislature has to make. There's no doubt about that. The things that we would ask that each of you consider in trying to set an appropriate policy is, first, we know that we have to address rehabilitation. We know that not everyone should be going to jail. Just last week, however, I appeared in a Superior Court hearing on a low-level Class C felony, a first-time Class C felony. This lady had stolen approximately $5,000 from her employer. She had done it to support a drug habit. She was not sentenced to that Class C felony. She was given what's called a suspended entry of judgment so that she was on probation with no jail time. The reason I was in court is that we were back in court because she had again possessed the controlled substances that we were trying to get her off of. My recommendation was not for the court to impose jail time. My recommendation was not for the court to impose that conviction. My recommendation was that the court send her to residential treatment. And the defense attorney said, Judge, for a first-time Class C felony, you don't have the authority to do that. Because there's a case called Nygren in the state of Alaska, and that case indicates that for every day that a person is in residential treatment, that's the equivalent of a day in jail. And when the courts weren't authorized to impose any jail time, this defense attorney argued the courts were also not authorized to require residential treatment, and the judge agreed. So at 120 days, would the courts have discretion to order residential treatment? The answer is yes, but only up to 120 days. Residential treatment programs can last 6 months. They can even last 18 months, like the RSAT program that's found in the Department of Corrections currently. And so if it's limited to only 120 days, you are still limiting judges' discretions to address the various types of cases that come before them. Not only are we talking about the substance abuse, we're also talking about violent crimes. violent crimes like an assault in the third degree where you can point a firearm in somebody else's face, crimes like sexual abuse of a minor in the fourth degree where there can be sexual contact between a victim that is 16 or 17 years old and someone that is much older than that. We're talking about crimes like harming a police dog in the first degree, which is killing a police dog. You're talking about stalking, which is having that unwanted contact with a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault, and to be able to have a gun or a firearm at the time of that stalking. These are the types of cases that we're talking about that the Department of Law is not suggesting that judges impose jail time for every single offense or the maximum jail time. All we're recommending to the legislature is that you very carefully consider how much discretion do you want to give the judges to decide on a case-by-case basis what's appropriate.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, Mr. Skidmore, the example you just gave, you said you described the word low level, and I'm just curious how that relates to first time, because the description that you gave was the woman came in, she stole $5,000 from her employer, she was let go, and then a period of time later, she was found again with drugs possession. So is that a first time, or is that low level? Because what we're talking about here is first time, not low level, first time. So how do those definitions relate?
Through the chair, Senator, the answer to your question is that when I talk about low level, I'm talking about the classification of the offense. In Alaska law, you have an unclassified felony, which is rape or murder, kidnapping. You have a Class A, a Class B, and a Class C. Class C felonies are the lowest level of felony that exists within the state of Alaska. So when I describe a low-level felony, I mean a Class C felony. But to answer your question about first time, our presumptive sentencing scheme starts by saying a first-time felony offense has a certain presumption, a second felony would have another presumption, a third or above would have another presumption. Now, the key within that is that that first-time felony offense means that you have not had a prior felony within the last 10 years. But if there was a felony more than 10 years ago, it would still be considered a first-time. A first-time felony offense does not mean that a person does not have a prior criminal history. You can have misdemeanor criminal history, but that misdemeanor criminal history does not alter that it's a first felony. So a first-time low level would mean a Class C felony in which it is a first felony for that person within the last 10 years.
Follow up?
Yes. I just want to state that second and third felonies have pretty significant sentencing and jail time, it looks like, according to this bill. So first time, I think we just want to make sure that we stay on first time here because this is sort of the issue. And then when you stated earlier that most states have for you indicated low level, that 365 is the more common practice for low level, does that also mean first time with the other states?
Through the chair, Senator, the answer to that question is yes. When I have reviewed what the other states do, there are 26 of them that have a range for first-time low-level offense, low-level felonies like the one that I described to you. And the ranges are anywhere from 0 to 1 year on up to 0 to 20 years. There are an additional 14 states that require some jail time, whether it's a year or 6 months. And then it goes up to 1.5 years on up to 14 years. So varying levels for that. So that's what the survey that the Department of Law has done of the other states indicates, is that most other states provide a wider discretion for their courts than we do currently.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow-up.
Last question. You also indicated how is active jail time and rehab programs. You said if they don't have the full 120 days or more than 120 days, would they just like leave rehab programs? Why are they one and the same? Why can't you have a rehab program last beyond 190 days, 120 days, 180 days, especially if it's working and especially if the offender is getting out of it, getting something out of it and actually wants to stay there? Are you finding that people want to bail as quickly as they can, or why does this have to be one and the same, jail time and rehab programs?
So Skidmore.
Through the chair, Senator, the answer to that question, what my testimony addresses is the authority of the courts to to order something. If I, as a citizen, have a substance abuse problem, and my family or I decide that I want to go to rehabilitation, I can go for as long as I want. But what we're talking about is how long could a court order someone to be in a rehabilitation program, a residential one, not an outpatient, but residential. And if the sentencing range that this committee decided to adopt was 0 to 120 days, the courts would be limited in ordering a defendant to residential treatment of only to 120 days. Could that individual stay longer than 120 days? They could, but it would not be based upon the court's order. The authority of the court would only be up to that 120 days. And so the policy that I recommend that this committee think about is how much residential treatment might you want to authorize a court to be able to order. If you were to decide you wanted to authorize more than 120 days, then you would need to have a presumptive range for active jail time of more than 120 days to authorize that under Alaska case law.
Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The records that I have, or information that I have regarding successful rehabilitation, are ones that individuals are willing to participate in. And the ones that are court-ordered have a very, very low success rate. Again, we're talking about first offenders here, and I think that this compromise needs some time to work, especially when you have court-ordered rehabilitation that has a very low success rate.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Senator Chair. Just to be clear, you start off by saying you support the amendment. You, Mr. Skidmore, you then give an example of a woman who was arrested, and it sounded like an embezzling type of case because of a drug habit, and you were in court to support that. But then you went into what sound like more serious, potentially violent crimes. I'm not quite sure when you went into that if you were trying to say that this amendment assists with those more serious crimes, or that those serious crimes, the judge would not have the leeway under this amendment to increase sentencing.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, let me correct a misunderstanding. The Department of Law is not supporting this particular amendment. The Department of Law believes that the 0 to 1 year is the appropriate discretion that ought to be provided to the courts. What I was indicating is that I was expressing an appreciation and gratitude in working with Senator Hoffman to ensure that should this amendment be passed, it didn't create other conflicts with law, trying to iron out some of those other details. The policy decision that's before this committee is to decide whether or not you would adopt a active range of 0 to 120 or 0 to a year. And it's the Department of Law's position that we believe 1 year is more effective. But again, I would reiterate, we understand this is a policy call, and we respectfully leave that policy call to this committee.
So you brought, through the chair, so you brought up those more serious crimes to demonstrate that they would, the 120 days would be the max of discretion for even those particular crimes?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that's precisely the point that I wanted to make, is that as you all make significant policy calls like this, what we most want to ensure is that you all understand the consequences of whatever policy decision you make.
Just one last
follow-up. Senator Dunleavy, follow up.
So if it's the 360, the judge has that latitude. He could say 50 days or 40 or 60 or 70. But again, if it's capped at 120, he can't go beyond that.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, you are correct. The way the law states is it starts at zero, so a person could receive no jail time at all. The judge just has the discretion of up to wherever you set that maximum cap.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy, thank you. Just given we have three people in line, Senator Michicki, followed by Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Von Imhoff.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. There may have been some misunderstanding in your example you gave about the woman who embezzled and then had a drug problem, which the follow-up problem is not a Class C felony. So I think that's an important thing to talk about. So what this amendment does is it has 18 months of potential imprisonment, but only 120 days of active imprisonment. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, that is correct.
And then what you said was there's been precedence in a case that defined residential treatment as imprisonment.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, the name of the case is Nygren, and that's correct. It's an old case here in the state of Alaska, and it talks about the amount of credit against a jail sentence that a person receives for residential treatment.
So in the case you discussed, it was her first time Class C felony, and you were negotiating when she had a follow-up charge of drug possession. Could you talk about that a little bit more? Because I think it's really important. On the reason that I supported this bill was to help with more active intervention in the drug-related crimes we're seeing that have exploded all over the state, right? So could you describe that in a different way? Because I heard some misunderstanding on what you were trying to say. We're still only talking about a first-time Class C felony with a sort of an aggravator of a lower crime. Is that correct?
So through the chair, the case that I talked about, the defendant in that case was convicted of theft in the second degree, which is a theft of over $1,000. There was not another conviction. The original theft, it was determined, was a result of trying to support her drug habit. The subsequent basis upon which we were in court is that she was on probation and had violated probation by continuing to use controlled substances. And so in discussing what the court could do as a result of that probation violation, I was recommending the court send her to residential treatment. And it was the defense who said, this is only a Class C felony, the original theft, that is, and therefore, Judge, you don't have the authority to impose any jail time, and therefore you don't have the authority to send her to residential treatment. You could send her to outpatient treatment, which is what the court ultimately did, but could not allow for residential treatment under those circumstances.
Senator Michicki, follow up.
So a single Class C with a probation violation that was a drug issue. And the only reason I bring that up is I do it seems like this may compromise sort of what we're after here on folks that are having drug problems, and we've seen a dramatic increase in those problems and the property-related crimes associated with them. The question I have is that a statutory change we can make with the Nygren case, or is that a spite of statute that it was found that residential treatment is being defined as a prison term?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, the difficulty in answering that question is that Nygren is an older case. I apologize, I don't have a copy of it with me today. So I'm not sure if I recall the exact premise upon which it is decided. I'm not sure, therefore, whether or not you could simply alter something in statute to address that or not. I would have to give more thought and study to that. I can only tell you what my experience was last week in Superior Court for this particular case.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop, followed by Senator von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Skidmore, do you have a good feel for how long? Is there a waiting period if a judge says we're going to get you right into residential treatment? Is there a waiting list? And if there is, how long does it take for a person to get into residential treatment?
Through the chair, Senator, I don't have an exact time of waiting lists for various treatment programs around the state. I can tell you that one of the things I'm familiar that the commission has discussed at length is the need to have more treatment in the state. I believe that there are a number of folks that would indicate they don't think we have sufficient treatment resources. I certainly have heard folks say that they believe there is a waiting period to get into residential treatment programs. So I don't dispute any of those things, and that's certainly a problem that this state will have to wrestle with, and I'm sure one of the things this committee may have to wrestle with. But what we're talking about today is what authority do you give judges, and then the second step would seem to be, are the resources available for what the judges want to do?
Follow up?
Senator Bishop.
And that's kind of my point. I mean, you can have the authority, but if you haven't got the fix at the other end, then what's, you know, it's like, then what's the point? You know what I mean? You got to have the treatment set up and in place and running to take these people that we're trying to help. So I'll just leave it at that for now.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. It was one of my comments or questions is, do we even have enough beds for court-ordered rehab at this point for second and third felonies? I don't know.
So through the chair, Senator, I couldn't tell you if there are enough beds at this moment or not. I have certainly heard people say they don't believe that there are enough within state. I am aware that there are many individuals who leave state for residential treatment. I certainly would not suggest that that's the ideal. Being able to do it in state would seem far better. How you solve the problem of having more residential treatment, whether that's something funded in the private sector, whether that's something that government wants to fund, those are other policy decisions that I believe the legislature and the rest of the state will have to struggle with. How do you solve that issue? But in solving that issue, even if you have sufficient beds, it's important that what we have within the law provides an appropriate framework for judges to act. And again, that's a policy decision for you all to make, but you have the framework and then you have the treatment. And don't forget that that's focusing on just the residential treatment aspect. None of that comes back and discusses whether or not additional time is appropriate to ensure that you have public safety for violent crimes.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
So I see that 365 days is potentially a bargaining tool for the Department of Law, but is it really good for recidivism? And the question is 120 days enough of a bargaining tool for your department to get what you feel is a fair suite of options to address the different crimes that are presented in front of you? And then the next question is, how does the presumptive range of 0 to 18 months fit in? Could a person, even though it says active imprisonment for 120 days under this amendment, what's stopping the judge from doing the full 18 months?
Through the chair, let me address those two questions one at a time. Let me begin with the notion that 365 days is somehow a bargaining tool. What I would tell the court, and I provided a written letter that explains some of this as well, that you're going to have 90% to 95% of the cases in the criminal justice system resolved through plea negotiations. That's just due to resources. And when you negotiate, the question is always, well, what are the ranges? Where do you start? If you start with only probation, then the Department of Law is left in a position where when we negotiate, we can't offer them probation because that's what they would get if they went to trial and exercised all of their rights. We have to give them some incentive to resolve the case at that point. Really, the only way we can get incentive at that point is to reduce cases to a misdemeanor. The difference between reducing cases to a misdemeanor from a felony, predominantly from our standpoint, is the difference between supervised and non-supervised probation. When you're convicted of a felony, there's a probation officer that's assigned, and so you can be supervised. That officer is going to make sure that you are employed, that you are going to the appropriate treatment programs, that you're following all those conditions that we might set. Unsupervised, basically what it means is we're waiting for some program to tell us if you did something, or we're waiting to see if you get convicted of another offense. So I don't view 365 as a bargaining tool. I view it as the policy that this committee and the legislature as a whole sets of what do you think is appropriate. Are there cases that you think for first-time Class C felony it would be appropriate to have more time than 120 imposed? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. If you have 120 or 365, certainly that would allow us to try and negotiate where some cases would be probation, but I would suggest to you that at 120, in order to get some cases to move forward and resolve, I suspect we'd still have to reduce some to misdemeanors. At 365, I would hope the number would be less, but I don't know for sure. As to your second question, I should have written it down. Now I forgot.
18 months.
18 months. Thank you. So 18 months, under the law as it's proposed in Amendment Number 1, that 18 months is the amount of time that can be suspended. And so what that means is that a court would have the ability to impose a sentence of 18 months with all but 120 days suspended. The 120 days would be the active jail time the person would serve up front. Excuse me. And the additional time that is suspended is the potential sanctions that could be imposed for violations of conditions of probation. A court would not be authorized to impose any additional active jail time absent a violation of probation under that scenario.
Senator Von Imhoff? Any further questions from Mr. Skidmore?
Can we have that ease, please?
Brief at ease. Back on the record. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, Mrs. Skidmore, do you know where the Office of Victim Rights is on this particular issue? What do they support?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I did not speak with the Office of Victims' Rights from the time that this particular amendment was proposed, but I did have an opportunity to speak with them back when the Department of Law was recommending a greater amount of discretion to courts, and at that time they were supportive of the 365 days that's currently in SB 54.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Michicki.
Just a quick one. Thank you, Madam Chair. What kind of comfort can I have? I guess I'll put it this way. Should I assume that every prosecuting attorney with the state is going to shoot for the highest number of days incarcerated, and that every defense attorney is going to shoot for the lowest number of days if incarceration occurs at all? How does that work? I tend to support allowing more room for the courts because I want the best outcome. I definitely believe that drugs rob people of their highest human potential, and I want active rehabilitation to be available. What should I assume? You talked about the one case, but what's more of the norm?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, to assume that prosecutors would seek the maximum sentence would be a mistake. I'll give you two quick pieces of data that support that concept. The first is I can tell you during my career I had an opportunity to work in what was called the property unit of the Anchorage District Attorney's Office, which handled all of the felony property crimes in Anchorage. And during the time that I was there, our standard offers to resolve cases, and this is when sentencing was far more than what it is currently, active jail time was allowed. And the standard offers for resolving cases were 24 months with 24 months suspended or 18 months with 18 months suspended. We sought probation in the vast majority of those cases. And while that was only my experience, the second piece of data that I would provide you is that when we looked at the numbers of people that were incarcerated in the Department of Corrections in 2015, what we found is the average number of days that first-time C felons received was under 120 days when the sentencing range was up to 2 years. What we're proposing, or what's currently in SB 54, is a year. So it's half of what it used to be. And yet we already know that the vast majority of cases, the average, was under 120. That would seem to suggest 120 is the right number. And I can understand how people would arrive at that reasoning. But what it fails to appreciate is that that 120 was an average, and that what we have always indicated is that the courts need discretion. There's such a wide range of Class C felonies. There's such a wide range of individuals, and that courts need to approach sentencing on a case-by-case basis, which is why we suggest there should be discretion.
Brief at ease. I'm back on the record. Are there further questions for Mr. Skidmore? Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Is Quinlan Steiner online?
Yes, this is Quinlan Steiner.
Mr. Steiner, you've heard conversations on amendment number one that suggests to change, to modify 1 year to 18 months and then insert an active term of imprisonment within this range may not exceed 120 days. Do you have comments for the committee's consideration?
Yes, thank you. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm a public defender for the state of Alaska. What I think is important for the committee to consider in the difference between 120 days and 360 days is this increase of discretion will necessarily result in an increase in jail. You're going from 120, which is really near the lower end, to a much higher sentence. That in and of itself is going to compromise public safety and reduce rehabilitation and potentially increase recidivism. That's what the data was suggesting that the commission considered. Other data that the commission considered is the idea that you can over-program people who are low at moderate risk of committing another offense. Over-supervision can actually cause them to fail in their attempts to rehabilitate themselves. Some individuals on the low end simply, when confronted by the system and the more moderate approaches are effective. You will likely see more of that as you raise the amount of jail time. Another thing the committee should consider is this will cost money, and that will undermine the availability of treatment for those individuals who are not going to jail. That's really the biggest challenge in this state is available for treatment when the person's ready to take advantage of it, and that's a key component. When somebody is confronted and they're willing to go and they're interested in going, having that treatment available at that moment is critical. Another thing to consider is with this proposal of 120 days with up to 18 months suspended, if there are violations, there is up to 18 months of jail that can be imposed. So the more moderate approach or modest approach in terms of rehabilitation can be taken at the C felony conviction, and then if there's any failures at that point, jail time can be imposed or other alternatives, including longer inpatient treatment, would be available. And I think some of the average sentences that are described, that Mr. Skidmore described, those are the average sentences that have resulted in very high recidivism rates that this state has. If you construct a system to allow what has gone on previously to continue to go on, you run the risk of not getting any benefit from it at all. And I think the 120 days strikes a balance between the community condemnation angle and maximizing public safety through obtaining, you know, opportunities for rehabilitation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Mr. Steiner, I you know, a lot of the information and data that we process in this is almost like you're more likely to have a vehicle accident within 2 miles of your home than anywhere else, because that's where you are 95% of the time. And the reason I bring that up I would think you would agree that a first-time C offender is more likely to be a second-time C offender than someone that has never offended, right? Would you agree with that?
Through the chair, I don't know that that's accurate. I don't recall seeing any specific data that suggested that the level of offense your first time out made a difference. If you're asking me, you know, if someone's first conviction was a misdemeanor versus first was a C felony, I don't know if that makes a difference.
Okay. So more importantly with the question is, should we look at a category of C felonies in the future? I know we're not going to do that in this bill. We want to get this moving. But should the sentencing ranges for C felonies be split between crimes that involve weapons or against a person from the other crimes that are C felonies? Would that be a better way? Would you support looking at it that way in the future? Perhaps the 360 for the more serious crimes and a 120-day for the alcohol, drugs, property-related first-time C felonies?
Through the chair, we actually had those discussions at the commission level, and I don't recall that we had any data that suggested that differentiating had any benefit. Often, what's the driving force in any level of case, in any type of cases, alcohol and drugs? Sometimes they're simple drug cases, sometimes they're theft cases, and sometimes they're cases that involve crimes against a person. I think the commission, if it were referred back, would certainly continue to discuss it. I think any issue that has data supporting it that would differentiate would be of interest to the commission. Certainly.
Further questions for Mr. Steiner? Thank you for following the conversation, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you.
Do the courts have comments on Amendment Number 1, Ms. Mead? Does Correction have comments on Amendment Number 1? Commissioner Williams? No. Does Health and Social Services, Division of Behavioral Health, Mr. Tony Piper, do you have comments on Amendment Number 1?
Through the chair, no, ma'am.
Thank you. Would the administration like to comment? Mr. Peterson? Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As is the case with many issues, there's many views on both sides. I do believe that this amendment makes a lot of sense, and there is strong support for this amendment at this table. And I do believe that there would be the votes to pass this amendment, but I have discussed this issue with the sponsor of the legislation, and knowing that he's given word that this issue would be addressed across the aisle, this is a must-have and needs to happen. It's the best chances are that it should be addressed possibly on the other side, and the sponsor has committed me to that. With that, I would withdraw Amendment Number 1.
Is there objections to withdrawal of Amendment Number 1? Seeing and hearing, Amendment Number 1 is removed, withdrawn. The CS for Senate Bill Number 54, Finance, /N, is before the body for consideration. Are there further comments on the CS for Senate Bill Number 54, Finance, an act relating to crime and criminal law? We went over the fiscal notes in a previous session. Senator Bishop.
Can I make a comment, ma'am, before I make the motion?
Please. Comments from the members.
Now that we've got the bill in front of us, we've heard some good discussion here this morning. There's been some good discussion for the last several days. I did miss Friday. I did try to get part of it as I was away on other state business. You know, I hear something here that I think there's three areas here that needs to be looked at going forward. Maybe if the people are listening in the other body, I know the bill sponsor's here, but I heard Mr. Skidmore talk about presumptive ranges, and it leads me to believe that maybe there's some room for improvement in presumptive ranges. Another area is this, I believe it's this Nygret rule that you're talking about. Maybe that needs to be looked at. Senator Bajicki, I believe, brought that up earlier. And the last thing is this C offender reclassification, least to worst, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is something that needs to be looked at going forward. And even though Mr. Quinlan, we heard that there was no data or statistics on that, I mean, common sense would just you would think that you would take a look at that. And we definitely have a problem. We know the issues.
it's 75% of the population is drug and alcohol related. Commissioner Williams has got a yeoman's job in front of him. We all need to work together to try to stem that tide, because it's a real issue. And we need to have the resources there. I mean, if to lock them up for 18 months or 2 years, and we got to make sure they get treatment right up front as fast as we can get it for them. And that's, you know, we're good at locking them up, but we're not too good at getting treatment. We need to accelerate the treatment, or we're just shooting ourselves in the other foot. And that's my opinion. So thank you.
Thanks,
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Bishop, we have other comments. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you to the Chair, and I appreciate what the Senator from Fairbanks just said. And I want to be very brief and thank Senator Coghill and his staff for listening to the thoughts and opinions of folks throughout the state of Alaska. This is not an exact science, as we know. This is a difficult issue to tackle, and it was a big issue. And again, as the Senator from Fairbanks said, this is probably not the end of this as this bill goes through, but there'll be more suggestions over time. We've got a number of horrific crimes that have occurred in the state, including the Valley, that are going to play themselves out, and I think the results of some of those court hearings and court cases are going to help us continue to improve the situation for Alaskans. I think everyone is trying to strike the balance between what's the right thing to do with offenders, but also protect the citizens of Alaska. And I do appreciate the efforts that have occurred so far.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Further comments from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 54, version 30-LS0461/N from committee with attached fiscal notes and committee recommendations.
Is there objection to moving the CS for Senate Bill number 54, Finance, from committee? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill number 54, Finance/N moves from the committee. Brief at ease while we sign the documents. We're back on the record. This is Senate Finance. It is about 10 after 10 a.m. on April 4th. I'm sorry, on April 3rd, 2017. Is there anything else to come before the committee? At this afternoon's meeting at 1:30, we'll be taking up the operating budget as well as the mental health budget. That's HB 57 and HB 59. On Tuesday morning, April 4th, we will be hearing SB 6, industrial hemp production, HB 16, driver's license requirements, disability ID and training, as well as SB 97, pension obligation bonds. With that, seeing no other comments, we're adjourned.